Hey everybody, welcome to Story Neds. I'm Jessica Kate.
I'm Hannah, and today you guys were so stoked because we have with us the wonderful Miss Melissa Tagg.
Woohoo! Welcome, Melissa.
Hi.
Melissa, do you want to just give a quick intro about yourself?
Sure. I'm a writer. I write inspirational contemporary romance. I have 11 stories out. I love it. I love talking to other writers, and I'm very excited to talk to both of you.
Woohoo!
Oh, yeah. I live in Iowa.
We're talking about old movies, and if you have heard Jess and I talk about Melissa's books before, you might know that one of her favorite things is old classic movies. And if you've heard us before, also, you probably know that Jess has not really tried out the classic movie genre, so we've gotten her to try it. We've gotten her to try a couple, but today we're mostly going to be talking about some of those classic movies that we absolutely love, and Melissa's going to talk a little bit about what she really loves about those classic movies and how she's able to tie some of those things into her writing. So, really exciting.
Okay. So, Melissa, what's your favorite classic movie, and why is that one the top one?
Okay, trying to pick one favorite is like, I think I've said this before, but like going into Willy Wonka's chocolate factory and trying to pick one thing to eat. But I will, a lot of times if I have to pick one favorite, I tend to say The Philadelphia Story. It's a movie from 1940. And the reason I say it's my favorite is because it has Cary Grant, Katharine Hepburn, and Jimmy Stewart. And those are my three favorites. So to have all three of them in one movie is amazing. And it's got fantastic dialogue. If you watch it, if you're at all kind of attuned to stage plays versus movies, you can tell that it's a stage play that was turned into a movie because it's really, really, really all about the dialogue. But it is witty, it's fun, it's romantic, and again, it has Cary Grant and Jimmy Stewart and Katharine Hepburn.
True story. Fun little fact, one of my old dance teachers was the daughter of one of the main actors in that movie. So it was so fun to get to hear her talk about all the old Hollywood glam that she was a part of. Her dad died while she was pretty young, so she didn't really get to know him that well. But it was always such a fun story to hear. But that's fantastic. Yay, guys, I'm going to talk about all of my favorites. But you guys have heard me talk about Casablanca before. And while I would say that that is the epitome of one of my favorites, I definitely have a whole host of a lot of other ones, including His Girl Friday, Move Over, Darling, Roman Holiday. I could go on and on forever also. So earlier in the intro, she said that her favorite was The Philadelphia Story. Melissa, take us off and tell us why you love The Philadelphia Story so much.
Okay, I love The Philadelphia Story for 1,000 reasons. The top three reasons are Cary Grant, Jimmy Stewart, and Katharine Hepburn. I love them. I love that The Philadelphia Story is kind of Katharine Hepburn's comeback. If you know anything about classic movies, a lot of people know that Katharine Hepburn, we love her now, but when she first started out as an actress, she kind of got the label box office poison, and every movie she touched failed. So she kind of went away for a while, and she did stage plays and stuff in Broadway, and so when she kind of wanted to make a comeback to Hollywood, she bought The Philadelphia Story, convinced Cary Grant to come be in it, convinced Jimmy Stewart. So I love it for that reason, too, that it's Katharine Hepburn's comeback. I love the dialogue. I love the romance. And it's so funny. Oh, I just love it so much.
What are some of your funniest parts of that movie, favorite parts of that movie?
There's a part in the middle of the movie where Jimmy Stewart has had a little bit too much to drink. And he goes to Cary Grant's house or wherever Cary Grant is staying, and they have a conversation, and Jimmy Stewart, everything he's saying is pretty funny, and Cary Grant's response to everything he's saying is kind of sarcastic, but Jimmy Stewart is hiccuping all the way through it, and it's so great. It's so zingy. I think that's what I love how witty it is. I love that the dialogue, there's so much subtext, things that people say they're actually in something else. I love that. Yeah. It's really the dialogue that does it for me.
Witty dialogue just makes a good movie. Like, I have to say, I've only watched two classic movies now, but out of the two of them, His Girl Friday was definitely my favorite because it was just so fast paced with the talking, and she has the most creative insults in the world. So that entertained me for a decent amount of the story. Still wouldn't describe myself as a classic movie fan. I was disappointed too. I thought that I would become one after watching Hannah's recommendations, and then I watched it and I was like,
we just gotta get the right ones for you.
It's just confirmed to me that I'm not. But the best part was, like, she walks in, and I think her first line of the movie in His Girl Friday is the Dark Lord of the Universe in, or something like that? And I laughed out loud. I was like, okay, that's good. That's very good.
So here's a fun fact about that movie. That is one of my other absolute favorite movies. And what I love about it is that was one of the very first movies, if not the first movie, where they let the actors, like, talk over each other. Because they wanted it to sound like actual dialogue. Before then, everything was very, like, straight-laced. One character said a line, the next character said a line. And so they actually, when they wrote the script, they structured it so that there were kind of non-important words at the beginning and ends of sentences, so that it wouldn't matter if they talked over each other. So I love it. I love how that movie kind of...
I noticed that during the movie how much they did talk over each other, and I was wondering, like, have they scripted out lines that we're not really going to hear because you can't tell what each person's saying? And yeah, I was wondering how that actually looked in the script. That's cool.
Yep. They were specific about it. Other fun fact about that movie. Just, I love that movie so much. So Cary Grant, by the time they did that movie, Cary Grant was pretty good at ad-libbing. But the heroine in the movie, Rosalind Russell, she was not so much. And so she actually hired somebody to help her come up with funny lines that she would then say to try to surprise Cary Grant. So they did do a little ad-libbing. But
you are a wealth of knowledge about this. All these are facts that I never knew.
Yeah, I might be a little obsessed sometimes.
I thought I was obsessed. Well, Jess, tell us about you. You watched His Girl Friday, and you were definitely more impressed with that than Roman Holiday. Tell us what you liked about His Girl Friday.
The best part of His Girl Friday was the dialogue. And, yeah, just how many ways can you tell someone that you don't like them? A lot, according to this movie. And I'm a sucker for love-hate things, and so it's just the whole premise that she was his ex-wife and he was trying to get her back. That was something that I liked, and it just led to great conflict between them. And I liked how she seemed to be a really respected journalist in the newsroom. I wasn't sure. Like I said, I don't watch classic movies, and I was like, wow, this is from 1940. This is a woman in the workforce. Things were different back then. I wonder how this is going to go. But she really held her own, and I was surprised and enjoyed that part of, that was really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. There definitely are classic movies where the female character has no strength whatsoever. And I love that in His Girl Friday, everything Cary Grant says to her, she comes right back at him. So
she goes toe to toe with him for the whole movie. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's fantastic.
Yes, that was cool. So Hannah, which one's your favorite? Tell us a bit more about it.
Okay. Well, I mentioned this in the intro, but one of my absolute favorites is Move Over, Darling. It was a movie that I was first introduced by my parents, I think when I was in high school, but it's Doris Day, and Doris Day is my favorite old-time classic actress. She just seems like she would be, like, the best friend in the world. But she plays a character called Ellen, and her character is, we first meet her character coming off of a stranded island where she has been already pronounced dead, and now her husband, or who she thought was still her husband, is now not married to her legally and has now actually married another woman, and she comes back into his life and just wreaks havoc, and the whole thing is it's farce, it's funny. There's lots of moments. There's a moment where she's actually in a car. I think it's a convertible, and it has the top down, and she goes through the car wash. And so she is soaking wet, coming out with all these suds, and I just remember her going, oh, my hair! And we have utilized that line many times as a family ever since. There are just many, many moments that lend itself to great comedy in that movie, and I think Doris Day does a great job playing such a funny way to play such a hard story. It really is one of my all-time favorites.
I feel like there's a big theme of exes in these movies. There's a lot of love-hate storylines, a lot of people who weren't together now anymore, and that's cool. I like that.
Do you want to know? You want to know part of why that is?
Yes, we do.
There's a whole trope in classic movies called the comedy of remarriage, and it has to do with there was like a moral production code from like 1930 to 1968 or something where Hollywood said, here are all the things you can't put in a movie in order to have movies be moral. And one of the things was any hint of infidelity. They didn't even like love triangles. So that's why you have so many movies where the characters used to be married and now they're not. And then they're going to get back together because they wanted to have a way to bring in like some kind of love triangle or another love interest, but they couldn't do it if the characters were married. So they'd say, hey, we'll have our characters be divorced. That way we can have other love interests and then they can get back together. So that's why seriously, it's like a ton of classic movies have that kind of same storyline of exes that hate each other and one of them has another love interest. And yeah. Hannah, have you seen My Favorite Wife?
No.
It's Cary Grant and I want to say Irene Dunne, but it's the same movie. Move Over, Darling. So yeah, same storyline. So Move Over, Darling, okay. I think was a remake of that.
I didn't know it's that. Crazy. I always love those little bits. That's actually how I got onto An Affair to Remember. Was because I remember watching Sleepless in Seattle as a kid, and they, of course, are sitting there watching An Affair to Remember, and it was kind of a sad story. I was I think I was 16. I had just had my driver's license, and I got in, like, this super minor accident. I was having a really bad day, and I just went down to the basement and turned on the TV, and An Affair to Remember started playing. I was like, oh, I've always thought I should watch this, because I'm watching Sleepless in Seattle, and that has since become one of my favorites, too, though that isn't as funny. It's just way more dramatic, but another Cary Grant role.
Nah. So how did you guys get into watching classic movies? Because they're decades and decades before either of your time.
For me, I think when I was a kid at some point, we rented a movie from the library, checked out a movie from the library called Bringing Up Baby. It's another Cary Grant movie. It's fantastic. And we watched it as a kid, and as a kid, I just thought it was so, so, so funny, and I don't know, it was just very normal, like, I don't know if my parents love old movies, and so I watched lots of them, and it really wasn't until I was probably a teenager that I was like, wait a second, I'm kind of weird. Nobody else watches black and white movies, like, but there's something about it. I think even as a kid, I was slightly whimsical, nostalgic, kind of like, even as a kid, had this love for things from long ago. So, and, you know, by the time I was a teenager, I was old enough to, like, start having a crush on Cary Grant. I'm sure that had something to do with
that. That's certainly not a normal teenage crush.
No. That's been dead for quite a long time.
That's cute. I kind of, like I had mentioned with Roman Holiday, that's kind of how I really started it, but I was that stubborn teenager whose parents really loved old movies, and every single time they pulled something out, I would dig my heels in and say, this isn't going to be cool. Can we watch something else, please? And they were good parents and saying, this is what we're watching, so too bad for you. And I remember watching movies like Audrey Hepburn's Funny Face. That was, I think, one of my very first introductions. Move Over, Darling, which I mentioned, that was one of my very first introductions to those types of genres of movies. I mean, we watched classic musicals, Rodgers and Hammerstein, all the time. But this is kind of a different genre where once they started to bring those out, I was absolutely stubborn and didn't want to watch them. And then eventually I realized, hey, these are actually pretty good. And I think it was in my junior or senior year of high school, I really started getting into old movies where my friends still to this day consider it my black and white phase. This is my black and white movie phase, even though some of them were in color.
I've never been in that phase before.
Even though some of them were in color, they still call it that, so it's kind of funny.
I think this spells out one of the differences between you and me, because when my dad said as a teenager, when I was a teenager, I'm pulling out the classic movies, he was referring to Lethal Weapon, Die Hard, and Rush Hour.
Still classic movies, just in their own right.
Yeah. I always have a hard time when people call, like, E.T. a classic movie. I mean, I need to accept that movies from the 80s and 90s are classic, but I'm just like, no, those are, like, new classics. Yeah. I love the old classics. The classic classics.
I mean, old glam Hollywood. I don't think it gets any better than the original Hollywood movies, so.
And tell you what, watching Roman Holiday last night, I don't think you can get more old glam Hollywood than Audrey Hepburn. I'd never actually, I knew who she was, but I hadn't actually watched anything that she was in. I was like, oh my goodness, look at this girl.
She's amazing. Like
her dresses, all of it, the hair.
That was one of my highlights from the movie, especially her dress at the start. But yeah, all her clothes. Mm. I was like, oh man, okay, this is good. Yeah.
So what did you think of the ending of Roman Holiday?
I was glad. I was surprised that they didn't end up together. I had thought that that's the way it was heading. But I was glad they didn't, mostly because I didn't like Gregory Peck.
What? You didn't like...
I said the same thing.
You didn't like Gregory Peck. I don't kind of handle...
Yeah, I kind of had the same reaction. I know. I'm the controversial one in this podcast. But, I didn't like him. So I was like, good!
I don't know how to handle this. I have friends that have, you know, I've told them, this is an amazing movie, you need to watch it, and then they get mad at me when it gets to the end because of the ending, and I'm like, no, it's beautiful, it's bittersweet, and it's so quiet. I can't get over how gentle and quiet that ending
is.
Yeah,
but,
that was good, and it was a classy ending, but yeah, he wasn't my favorite. But my favorite movie of moment of the movie was the fight, when everybody's fighting and then they all start smashing things over people's heads. When the first thing smashed, I kind of sat up on the couch and went, oh, this is getting better. And then when she smashed the car over his head twice, I was like, yes, yes, that's terrific. The whole movie just went up a notch for me.
Yes.
I might be going back to those Lethal Weapon roots.
Well, Melissa, why don't you tell us a little bit about what's new with you? Actually, if you want to talk too a little bit about how some of those old movies have really inspired your writing, because I know as we've read your books, that's really come across, and at least for me, because I've watched many of those old movies. So
I was aware that there was references in the books. I just didn't get what they were.
Actually, so I will tell you that I have had editors make me take out references to old movies when I do it too much in books, because a lot of times I'm doing it for my own amusement, and they'll be like, Melissa, that one's too obscure, nobody's gonna get it. But it makes me really happy when I leave one in and somebody does get it. But yeah, so I don't know that I ever consciously decided, hey, I'm gonna try to mimic old movies in my books, but my very first book that was published is basically it's kind of a knockoff of Christmas in Connecticut, which is a classic movie from, I want to say, like 1945 or 44. It's a Christmas movie, obviously, if it's called Christmas in Connecticut. And it's about a journalist who has kind of come up with a fake life for herself. And in this fake life, she has a husband and a son or a baby. And she gets to the point where she kind of has to actually produce said husband and baby and pull off a fake marriage. But at the same time, she's falling in love with somebody else. And so I loved that. I loved the thought of, you know, usually if somebody is going to do a fake marriage story, the character is going to fall in love with the person they're pretending to be married to. But I loved that in Christmas in Connecticut, no, she has a fake husband, but she's actually fallen for somebody else. So I borrowed that storyline a little bit, and that became my first novel. And I think from there, just subconsciously, every time I write books, I'm being affected by old movies. The book I'm writing right now, I didn't even realize it at first, but there's a scene where I have a man in a frilly women's robe walking around and somebody
that was your Facebook post this week.
Yes. Weeks ago I was telling a writer friend about that, and she said, well, you were clearly influenced by Bringing Up Baby. And I was like, whoa, I was. I just didn't realize it at the moment, but Bringing Up Baby has a very well-known scene where Cary Grant is wearing a women's robe, and yeah, so sometimes I am conscious of what I'm putting in, and other times it just ends up in the story.
But and so, when you know your books and see some of those old movies, you can really see those, like, zingers that you were talking about, the witty back and forth between the characters. You really reflect that in the dialogue.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that, because that's my favorite thing about old movies. And I don't know what it is. I know there's great movies today with great dialogue, but I think they worked harder at it. I think they used to work harder at it just because maybe it's because they couldn't say as many things. You know, they had so many rules of morality and etiquette that they were trying to follow. So there's so much subtext in everything that they say. I don't know. It just seems like it was wittier back then.
To me, I also think that I wonder if there's an element of we have so much more technology available to us where we can, you know, it's green screen or it's action or it's all of these different types of things. And so maybe the dialogue just isn't up to par because you needed that back then to make a movie worth going to. So that's my theory.
Yep. Yeah, I agree.
Yep.
Awesome. So tell us about what you're writing now, Melissa.
I'm deep into the middle of the story, so I'm still figuring out what it is. But I have a series of books set in a made-up town in Iowa, and that I've actually set a couple series there, and I finished both of those series last year. And when I was trying to figure out what to write next, I honestly kept getting letters from readers saying, is this side character going to get a story? Are we going to get another story in Maple Valley? Are we ever going to see your past characters again? And I thought, well, it seems kind of obvious that I should probably keep writing books set in this same small town. So I'm working on the beginning of a new series set in the same small town, all with an element of mystery and all featuring some various side characters from past books.
Yeah.
So it's kind of all coming together. Yeah, kind of a new,
nice,
new thing. So
for those of us who love our books, I could not be more excited, because when I had to part the end of your last book, it was that deep sadness of finishing a book, but realizing this is the end. This is it. So I'm glad to know it's coming back.
I'm glad you had that feeling, because I had it too, and I kind of thought a few times, am I crazy? Like, these are fake people.
Not at all.
I'm so emotional about this, but yeah, thank you. I appreciate that.
And I think people love the shared universe. Like, if Marvel's taught us anything, we just love little Easter eggs about other characters, even if the movie's not about that one.
Mm-hmm. It's true, for sure. Yeah,
I was just saying, I was obviously Facebook stalking you this morning to, like, check what you've been up to before we chatted, and I saw the name of your character, was it Marshall Hawkins, I think, was written there,
yeah.
And I read the name, and I was like, oh, snap, Melissa, good name.
You want to know where I got it? I can tell you exactly where this name came from. A lot of times I very thoughtlessly give characters names. I don't think hard about it. I don't look up name meanings, that kind of thing, but this character that I'm writing, if you have watched Stranger Things, have either? I'm slightly in love with the police chief from that. I mean,
yes.
Oh my word.
I love
him. Anyway, so I named the character Marshall because Marshall, I thought, another type of law, and he's a detective, so I thought I'll give him a name that, you know, anyway, and then Hawkins is the name of the town from Stranger Things. So
as I said the name aloud, I was like, Marshall Hawkins, like Hawkins out of Stranger Things. I'm so glad
that was connected. Totally where it came from. So.
Yes, he's a fantastic character. There's something about dad characters, even though he's not actually the father of any of those kids, he really watches out for them. And I know you often have like a big dad sort of theme, especially with Logan's story in that book. Yeah.
What I love about Hopper too is I love that they don't really try to make him likable in the first few episodes, and yet if you're watching carefully, you see little hints, like his very first shot in Stranger Things, the very first episode, when you see Hopper, you see a drawing of like a kid, like a kid's drawing hanging on the wall, and then you go to see Hopper passed out on the couch with pill bottles and beer bottles all around him, and you're like, and if you catch that little drawing, you're like, okay, this guy that I'm about to be introduced to, there's just nothing whatsoever flattering about him when you're first introduced to him. But if you have that picture in your mind of that little kid's drawing, it's like, oh, there's going to be more to him. He's going to have a way. I love him.
There is more to him, really love him. And even season two, where he's like, he's now an improved person. He's still a very broken one. Like, his attempts to take care of other people are so flawed, and he's bad at it. But yeah. He's trying so hard. Oh my gosh. That I won't spoil too much. I'll just say that fight scene, and anyone who's seen it will know what I'm talking about. That was both awesome and heart-wrenching. And it was so good.
Yes. Oh my goodness. I love. I just need season 3 to hurry up and come because
I know. So good.
Awesome. Yep. Well, thank you, Melissa, so much for joining us. It's been a blast, and we hope you'll return someday soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me. Thank you for letting me talk about one of my favorite subjects.
Yes, anytime.
Classic movies and Jim Hopper from Stranger Things. That was a nice little bonus at the end.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys for joining in and listening to us. We hope you enjoyed this amazing episode, and we will see you on the next one. Have a great day.
And if you want to continue the conversation with us, you can find us on Twitter. Melissa is at Melissa_tag. Hannah is at HannahDAuthor. I am at JessicaKate05. And the podcast is at StoryNerds_chat. We're on Facebook as well at facebook.com/storynerds. And don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. That really helps boost our visibility and find more and more story nerds out there to connect with. And you can join us next episode for more story nerds goodness. Bye.